Well, today we are sitting down with John Sander and we are going to go over lubrications. Hi, John, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself?
Great, thank you. So to kick things off, our first question here is, what is grease and how is it different from traditional oil liquid lubricants?
So this is actually one of my favorite subjects, I have to admit. So I've been actually doing this since 1989. I've been with lubrication engineers for 33 years, actually in April. And most of my time has all been spent in the lab and also doing a lot of our product design and development type work. And the grease side of it is actually, to me, more exciting than doing the oil blending side of it. And I say that only because, to me, grease is a little bit more of an interesting lubricant animal in terms of the product formulation side, and ultimately really even how it performs in the applications. And what I mean by that specifically is we're all pretty familiar with the fluid lubricants that we use and a lot of the things that we do every day. Basically, it's comprised of various different base fluids, and then you impart additives into that formulation in order to improve certain properties. So in other words, if you wanted to provide corrosion resistance or reduce friction, which is the common thing that we all know that we want lubricants to do, and ultimately by reducing friction, decrease wear. Well, the other thing we know about a lot of these fluid lubricants is exactly that, they're fluid. So they flow fairly easily. So there are certain applications where if you were to put a fluid lubricant in to do the lubricating, if that application can't be properly sealed, that means that the lubricant would just run right out. Well, we know that no lubricant is not a very good lubricant. So if you can't keep it in the application, it's not going to provide the lubricating properties that it's desired to do. So that's where grease comes in. So if you want to kind of take a very simplistic look at what is grease, it's more or less the fluid lubricant, but it's thickened with a type of a thickener. The thickener's main property is to actually give it body so that it doesn't run out of unsealable type of applications. Or let's say things like open gear applications, for example. They're literally that, they're open. Or like a fifth wheel on a truck. Once again, it's not sealed. It's out, it's where the trailer slides up onto the back of the truck and it's out there in the environment. And if you were to pour fluid lubricant on there, it would eventually just kind of drip off and you'd have no lubrication left.
Well, thank you. And why are both of them needed?
So kind of described a little bit of that already, but to maybe go into a little bit further depth on that, you can imagine that if you had certain applications where you do need that fluidity of the fluid lubricant, well, grease is not going to flow as easily. So therefore, that would be maybe a negative towards the grease. Therefore, you'd need a fluid lubricant. The other thing about the fluid lubricants is they actually splash and run off of things. So think about an engine oil, for example. In your engine, you've got the oil down in the crankcase, and the way that the lubrication works with that is it gets splashed around or perhaps even pumped around within that engine, and it runs across many of the parts. And as it's doing so, it pulls heat off of those parts. So besides in an engine, besides just friction, you know, the moving parts rubbing together and creating heat due to friction, you also have combustion going on in the piston, or that's what's actually creating the power that runs the engine. So there's a lot of heat that's getting blasted onto that, and it transmits. I mean, the metal parts that make up an engine conduct heat, but they don't conduct it fast enough in certain situations. So therefore, if you can splash the lubricant off of it, well, what happens? Lubricant runs down. As it drifts back down into the crankcase, you now have a cooling type system in there, your radiator and your engine coolant system that pumps the fluid through there that helps to remove that heat. So that's one of the disadvantages of grease is heat removal. They do a wonderful job of helping to decrease friction, but because they don't readily flow, going back to some of the earlier discussion, exactly why we chose degrees, so that it doesn't run out. But at that same time, if it can't move around readily, it also is not as efficient at removing heat. So you can kind of see there where you need to have both. Like I said, you know, you got certain applications where you actually need the stuff to flow and splash around and move readily, and then there's the other ones where you can't keep it sealed very well, where the grease needs to be in there as well. Another application that one could think about is where you have pounding. So I'm thinking of maybe you've seen these large front loaders with a big scoop on the front, and they're driving along and they smash into a big pile of sand or something, and then they scoop that up and then they go to a truck and dump it in there. Well, they have something called hinge pins, and those hinge pins are out there in the elements. When that bucket goes smashing into that pile of sand, a fluid lubricant would be compressed out of the application fairly easily, and therefore you'd allow a lot of metal-to-metal contact. Grease being thick and not as flowable, it basically stays in there and provides a little bit more of a cushioning effect. So that's a long way to describe why you need both, but I think perhaps it helps to kind of visualize what the applications are and why you would need both.
It did. Thank you so much for going a little more into depth. Now, how would one choose the correct grease for an application, and how is it installed?
Another good question. So first of all, we kind of just started describing some of the various different applications. And one of the things I probably didn't describe a whole lot on the greases is there are different types of thickeners. There's different additives that are imparted into those products. There's different viscosities of base fluids that are used to formulate them, just like you do with a fluid lubricant. And so one of the things that you have to be aware of when you're choosing it is where it's going to be used. And then there's a term that's often used by a lot of the applications engineers for lubricants called LETS, L-E-T-S, which stands for load, environment, temperature, and speed. And so based upon those four parameters, that's often how they decide upon what kind of grease needs to be chosen, and perhaps possibly even what kind of thickener needs to be used within that grease. So maybe I should go into just a little very brief discussion on the types of thickeners, and we might be able to start using that to understand a little bit about how you choose one thickener over the other. So there's really three major types of thickeners. There's soap thickeners, and I'll describe what those are in just a second. There's inorganic thickeners. And then last but not least, I'll say there's what they call polymeric thickeners. With the polymeric thickeners, they are exactly what they sound like. A polymer is basically a large molecular weight substance that's kind of like plastic is a polymer, or rubber is a polymer. And one of the more common ones that we're familiar with, and if you look at electric motor applications, they might talk about something called a polyurea grease. In that application, you're actually creating a synthetic organic thickener system that is used to disperse the oil and additives. And that type of thickener system works very well for a lot of your electric motors, I think, because of it's fairly innocuous to if it were to get on some of the motor windings and some of those types of things. But anyway, that might be why you would pick that. Over the years too, they've just seen a lot of success too, because it also does not conduct electricity very well. It's more of an insulator, and so an electric motor, that's a benefit. You might look at thickeners like the soap type thickeners. The most common is what they call lithium thickeners. Now has to be expanded a little bit. There's two different types of lithiums, what they call lithium complexes, and then simple lithium soap greases. Another type of soap grease are calciums. Another type is aluminums and aluminum complexes. There's what they call barium greases, not so common anymore, but they're still out there. And so with each of these types, basically what you're doing in order to make them, and that's why they're called a soap, is that you perform a saponification reaction is what they call it, where you're reacting a base, being, you know, maybe you're familiar with acid and bases from a general chemistry class. When they talk about that, you're basically reacting two things together, and one, they neutralize each other. An acid, acid, it reacts with the base and they form water and whatever else they're going to make. In this case, you're looking at organic carboxylic acids like stearic acid or oleic acid or something along those lines, which are oftentimes called fatty acids. You're reacting that with a soap, or excuse me, with a base. In the lithium greases, for example, it's lithium hydroxide, and you end up forming a lithium stearate or lithium 12 hydroxy stearate. There's just depends on what fat, and long story short, that creates a kind of a twisted molecule, if you will, that they use to create sort of a sponge structure in which the oil and the additives are incorporated in between the soap fibers. And then when they're put into an application and it's and the machine starts moving, the oil and additives will actually slowly bleed out of the thickener and provide the lubricating in between the contact zones of the moving equipment parts. So it sounds maybe kind of complex, and it is for us formulators, but for the end users, suffice to say, they don't need to worry about all that, because hopefully that's what us as formulators are doing. The thing that they do need to worry about, though, is going back to that let's. You know, what, in order to choose the right grease, once again, like I said, you need to be aware of what the base stock viscosity is, because as that bleeds out, that's going to provide the lubricating. If you've got really, really high temperatures or low speeds, then you need to have a very thick base stock, because at high temperatures, that thick base stock becomes thinner. When it's hot, it becomes thinner. If you got very, very low temperatures or very high speeds, now you need to have a very thin base stock, because that, going back to what we described earlier, high speeds, you need to be able to have really good flow properties. So the thinner the oil base stock is that's in that grease, the easier it will have as a time to get in between those contact zones. So you can see that there's different ways a formulator has to think about how he or she is producing this product when they're putting together the formulation, so that when the end user is going to choose the proper lubricant, they then have to consider those things. The other thing is back to that environment. So is it a hot environment? Is it dirty? Is it cold? So, you know, if you've got problems with contamination, for example, the contaminant that can get in there may actually not do a very good job with a certain grease. In other words, I've seen where you go into some plants and say it's a food plant and they're bottling pickles, for example. The pickle juice can be fairly acidic, and certain grease types will be degelled by the acidic nature of that pickle juice. So if you've got an environmental concern that you need to be aware of, you may choose a different thickener over another thickener. The last type of thickener I did not talk about was the inorganic thickeners. And one thing about those, one of the more common types is what they call a bentonite clay. They're usually kind of it's a coated clay. So it's not like you're just taking dirt and blending it into the grease. But I do like to kind of liken it to a mud pie, because basically these inorganic thickeners are usually a powdered material, and you just use high speed agitation, or what they call homogenization, in order to get it properly dispersed within the oil and additives. And like as when you were a small child and you were playing out in the mud, you had water and you started adding more and more dirt, and all of a sudden it turned into some kind of thick mud rather than water. Well, that's kind of what you're doing here with these inorganic type thickeners, is just slowly putting it in there and getting it all mixed in until you get a thick consistency. So the benefit of those is that when you're going into very, very high temperature applications, most of those solids, inorganic solids that you'd be dispersing in there, don't necessarily melt until they get to really, really, really high temperatures, where the soap type greases do have top temps that they can be used, and eventually they melt, and then out goes the oil and the lubricant as a whole if it gets too hot. So you can see we got a lot of different chemistries and soap types and ingredient types that we can use to formulate the proper grease lubricant for the proper application. Now, the last piece that I'll suggest in terms of if you're lubricating bearings and you're trying to choose the right product or the right grease, and this kind of goes back to a selection of the base stock, there's what many engineers use called bearing calculations, where they use the diameter of the bearing and the width of the bearing, and then the speed of how fast the machine is moving, and they can calculate the proper viscosity that would be required of that grease. And then also, depending on the temperatures, they also may choose the grease thickener, grease consistency grade. That's something I did not talk about, is the National Lubricating Grease Institute has actually created a scale for greases, and that scale goes from 000, NLGI 000 grade, all the way up to an NLGI 6 grade. NLGI 6 grade is basically almost like a wax, like a candle. It's almost a solid material. It lays on there and slowly wears away. Pretty uncommon. Not it used to be more common in history, but not so common in most applications today. You get to that 000, you're now looking at a grease that's almost semi-fluid. You can pour it. So it would have a consistency perhaps similar to maple syrup, for example. Probably the most common grades that you'll find in most applications are NLGI number ones and NLGI number twos. And those have some body to them, but so they're not a solid, but they're also not a liquid. And so oftentimes a grease might be described as a semi-solid because, you know, like I said, you can put it between your fingers and move it around, so it's really not solid. But if you just put a blob of it on your desk or on a piece of metal or something, it's just going to sit there. So it doesn't run off like oil would. So oftentimes describe it as a semi-solid.
Well, thank you. So do you have a favorite grease thickener?
I kind of do. So there, I've become more and more fond recently of a type that they call calcium sulfonates. The lithiums, like I said, are probably the most common type that are used out there. And I like the lithiums, and they're probably the most familiar, and they have very, very good compatibility. The calcium sulfonates are really, they've been around for years, but really have gained popularity more recently. And the reason being is that term lithium, you may be familiar with that, and especially because if all of us today with all of our electronic devices we have, and also with a lot of the electric vehicles coming out, you hear that they're using lithium-type batteries in those. And all of us love all those things, but what that's done for us in the grease industry is now there's more and more lithium being consumed by the electronics industry that it's started to drive the cost of the lithium hydroxide that we use in order to make the very popular lithium soap greases up dramatically. It's also even just made some supply chain challenges in terms of our suppliers have started saying, well, you know, you bought this much, but next year we may not be able to sell you all that much. So if you grow dramatically on your grease business, that may be a problem for us. So with supply chain pinches kind of staring us in the face, we're trying to say, well, what is next? Well, the calcium sulfonate was always kind of lingering back there in the background. And then as, you know, it has really, really good performance attributes. And historically, it required a lot more thickener than the lithium greases did in order to achieve the same level of thickening. So I think that was perhaps maybe a little bit of the downfall of them, not to mention the fact that lithium greases were so prolific out there that most people didn't want to change. They just knew what they knew, and and so they were very, very common, and so they just kept buying what they would buy. Well, as supply chain becomes a little constrained here in these last several years with COVID and so on, there's been kind of a growth. There was already prior to COVID a little bit of growth going on for the calcium sulfonate thickener type greases, but now after you start seeing the prices of the lithium going up and everything, this one's really starting to take off. And the other thing that I really like about it as a formulator is in the lithium greases, in order to get the lubricating properties and all the various different properties that we need the grease to do. So some of those would include oxidation resistance. So you add additives in order to improve the oxidation resistance. You put in corrosion inhibitors to protect against rusting and corrosion of yellow metals. You add anti-wear additives to provide anti-wear, or extreme pressure anti-wear additives if it's really heavily loaded. Well, the calcium sulfonate thickener itself is the only thickener type that really also kind of brings some natural lubricating and also corrosion resistance properties with the thickener itself. All the others, you really have to add additives in order to impart those types of performance attributes. So it makes it a somewhat unique thickener system, because it actually, so you could make a pretty good full performing grease without even adding really any additives with the calcium sulfonate thickener. So that's, I guess, kind of, if I were to say what's my favorite, I kind of like it, and honestly, I like them all, but if I had to pick on one, I've been really kind of in finding more and more utility to that calcium sulfonate thickener and also the unique properties that it possesses.
Well, I know you did hint to this a little bit, but do you use the same test to evaluate greases and fluid lubricants?
So, yes and no. So, I mentioned the NLGI grades. You're familiar, and I mentioned viscosity testing. Well, viscosity testing is for fluid lubricants. Not to say that maybe you might be able to run some viscosity tests on greases, but not typically so. The ones that we're familiar with, so like the SAE, or Society of Automotive Engineering, viscosity grades for automotive lubricants. So like you're familiar with the 10W30 or 5W30, 5W20. Those are actually fluid viscosity tests. There's the ISO grade ones, which are actually for most of your industrial grade lubricants. So you look at like an ISO 46, ISO 32. So there you're talking about mostly your gear oils and hydraulic fluids and turbine oils, for example. Grease, on the other hand, you might actually test the base oil before you get it mixed into the grease thickener. And so then you can say, well, the base oil has this certain viscosity. In fact, you'll see that oftentimes on grease literature, where let's say it contains an ISO 220 viscosity grade base fluid. Well, that means they actually, us formulators, did the testing with the base product and its added, the base fluid product and its additives before we dispersed it into the thickener. Once it's dispersed into that thickener, if you try to pull it into that same viscometer and expect it to flow, it won't happen. So the test that they use that would be viscosity-like is that NLGI grade system that I was describing that describes the thickness of the grease. Honestly, it's not really a viscosity, but I liken it to a viscosity in that both regular viscosity tests and also the tests for the fluid lubricants, for the grease, are looking at how thick it is and how well it can flow. So like I said, a triple zero grade or even a double zero grade grease, for example, you could open up the container and you could basically pour it out of the container. You may have to scrape the last little bit out because it'll kind of hang to the drum. But whereas if you had an oil, you'd open up the drum and it would just pour right out. So some of the other tests that have to be varied. So when we're talking about evaluating wear properties, we may actually use the same wear tests in our lab to evaluate the wear properties of a grease and of an oil. The main difference then becomes, how do you test the product that doesn't flow if the test requires the grease or the oil to be actually flowing into the wear zone? So sometimes there may be some slight modifications on a very similar test in order for it to run a grease versus an oil. Same thing being true of some of the corrosion tests. So with fluid lubricants, because the fluid will actually run off, you typically are using maybe some sort of a metal specimen, and you mix together the oil and the contaminating water, for example, and they're stirring together and mixing. So it'd be like in a real life application where contamination gets into the machine, and now you're trying to see how well the oil still can protect against rusting if there's water contamination present. Well, when you're talking about greases, a lot of times now we're lubricating a bearing, and so the industry has actually chosen to use an actual bearing. And you squirt the grease into the bearing, agitate in some water, and then after a certain amount of time of soak time at elevated temperatures, you take it out and see whether the bearing rusted. So you can see you're still evaluating a lot of the same type of properties, but the apparatus to do the testing may be slightly different.
Well, thank you. And I know we talked a little bit about the future of where grease thickeners are going, but what does the future look like for grease in general?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. First of all, you're right, we absolutely did talk about the lithium side of things, and that's really got us watching a lot just to see where that goes. So far, from my vantage point, I have not noticed it negatively affect and start dramatically creating a rush away from lithium for the grease industry, but it definitely is making us all sit back and take notice and think about that. So, what does the future look like for lithium greases? If the battery industry continues to take more and more of the lithium, we may not be able to get it. And at that point, if we can't get it and industry needs more and more if it grows, then we got to look at alternative thickener types in order to fill the need for lubricants. So at that point, you could see a shift in thickener types that might be used for various different applications, and maybe OEMs, original equipment manufacturers, beginning to recommend other thickener types, where right now their main recommendation may absolutely be for a lithium or a lithium complex right out of their manuals. They may have to start recommending something different. So that's one thing. The other thing that's kind of interesting is the National Lubricating Grease Institute actually for years has had a specification in place that was for evaluating wheel bearing and automotive lubricant properties. They called it they had what they called the LA, LB, GC, and then you could put those together. And those were for wheel bearing and chassis, like I said, lubricants. And many of the OEMs would actually attach onto that. Well, these days, many of the vehicles that we all drive and buy have permanently sealed bearings on them. So those tests, not to say that they're not important, but automotive lubricants or automotive greases in general are not as much of a service product anymore. So for the typical user to go out and buy them, they may not be as interested or concerned about that LB and GC specifications that were out there and readily available to many of the users. Those have been kind of started to be considered as multi-purpose greases because of that idea of it being wheel bearing and automotive chassis. But still, they were dedicated to automotive. Well, we all knew that even though people were buying these NLGI greases, they were using them in industrial applications. So go back about 3-4 years ago, a fairly significant group of OEMs, additive manufacturers, grease manufacturers, and the lubricant test providers started getting together saying, there's a need out there for what they call these multi-purpose greases. So they had some groups get together at the NLGI meetings, and between the European, or I'm going to say the global participants, as well as the U.S. participants at NLGI, they've created now what they call the HPM, High Performance Multi-Purpose Grease specification. And this same specification has various different tags that they call them, and the tags are dedicated to higher performance yet, even beyond just the multi-purpose grease spec. So I think that's the next thing you'll see. It's just started taking off. That spec has been in place now, not quite 2 years. And currently there's only like 10 products that actually have been approved towards the HPM classification. And of those, of those 10 that are currently approved, only a few of them actually carry more than, say, one tag or two tags. And ultimately, there's also plans to incorporate additional tags. So for right now, there's a water resistance tag, there's a corrosion resistance tag, there's a wear reduction tag, and what am I missing? Low temperature tag. There's ultimately plans to perhaps down the road incorporate a high temperature grease spec tag, and I honestly don't remember the other one, so I'll stop there. But that's one thing. So I think that could actually drive an improvement in grease performance out there, because it's not an easy classification in order to get a grease approved. And so I think marketing-wise down the road, you'll start seeing marketing people want to have it. If an OEM latches onto it and says, well, that's what the grease must be in order for it to go into our equipment, that'll make huge strides towards the majority of formulators having to offer and or formulate an HPM grease. Now, does that mean this HPM can be used in everything? No. So there will still be other grease formulations. Many of the ones that are already in existence have very specific applications they're designed for, and they may not necessarily pursue the NLGI HPM. But I do see that being out there and becoming something that's going to be more and more embraced by the industry, and therefore ultimately the end users.
Well, John, thank you so much for taking your time today and letting the users of CBM Connect know a little bit more about grease and fluid lubricants. Now, if an OEM or, say, somebody would like to reach out to you to learn more, how would they get in touch with you?
Sure. So, first of all, I'm always open to talking. If you can't tell, I kind of enjoy it. So I do like to be, I do like to actually talk on the phone. And if you go onto the LE website, we do have an 800 number there, 1-800-LE-PROUD. And so with that, we sell a live person that answers the phone, and they would be able to transfer that call to me. Secondarily, you could reach out to me via email at j.sander, so j.sander at L-E for Lubrication Engineers, hyphen, inc.com. So that's j.sander at L-E hyphen inc.com.
Thank you. On behalf of the entire team here at CBM Connect, we thank you so much for your time. And if you are looking for more information on grease and lubricants, you can visit www.cbmconnect.com. See some articles and webinars, much of which that John Sanders and the team over at Lubrication Engineers has supported. So thank you all for your time, and have a great day.